don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
This is Teacher Talk. We are live here. We got Steve Abbey from Thomas Starr King Middle School. Hey, Steve.
Is this the one that works?
I think so.
It's actually AB.
AB.
Yeah, like poet, I got stung by AB.
The Poet Laureate of Los Angeles.
That's how I make the kids say it. Poet Laureate, awesome.
And,
I gotta do some writing.
So, you're an English teacher.
That's right, yes, I'm an English teacher. Am I speaking too loud?
No, this is good.
Okay.
You're in the right range.
Cool.
And you're at King.
Yes, I'm at King Middle School.
So how do you like King?
I think King is awesome. It's a good place. I've enjoyed working there. You know, it's where I was first hired, and it's just worked out that I've been there the entire time.
Wow, that's kind of... Well, to me, it seems pretty rare to have somebody teach for... Because you've been teaching for 16 years.
Yeah, it's my 16th year.
At the same school.
Yeah. You know. It is a kind of... There are a few teachers who've been there longer. You know. But not that many anymore. Not as many as there were.
So what does it mean for your... Just for your work environment that you've been there for that long? What is... the difference between how it is for you and how it would be for somebody at a new school?
Well, I mean, what do you mean? How is it for me as opposed to somebody who's starting out?
Well, yeah, I mean, I imagine that you just know the ins and outs of the school so well that...
Okay, I'm sorry. You were going to finish the question.
No, I'm just trying to do sentence starters here.
That's how we live.
That's our bread and butter.
Well, the thing is about working at a place for a long time is, so much about teaching is, reputation exactly, but you get you belong to a community and they know you in the community. So you get a little more, you're kind of supported by a group, and the longevity, you're kind of able to move around. The thing is about King is there's always been, I've thought about leaving at different times for different reasons. And, I always end up not doing it because there's for one reason or another, but basically it comes down to just like, there's a lot of love for what I do there. There's appreciation either from administration or the community. And, my daughters, have, one has gone through the program and one is in the program. So, it's just, there's this like real connection to the place for me. And when I say real, I just mean that, there's having my own kids there, family real. But real as in really creating something of value and sticking with it. And there's like I said in the beginning, there's a lot of love for what I do.
What grades do you teach?
I teach seventh grade. Seventh grade English.
It's my grade. So
yeah.
I'm teaching. So
it's good. It's the seventh.
How long have you been teaching seventh?
Well, I've been teaching seventh for 16 years. I have done eighth grade, a little bit here and there, but it's basically been seventh grade. Next year, I'm thinking about moving to the eighth grade because the eighth grade... I teach in the Gifted Magnet at King.
Oh.
And all right, Caleb Del Cid. Shout out to the Del Cids.
Who's that?
They were some students of mine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Sammy and Caleb. Caleb ended up being this really awesome writer.
Really?
Yeah, he did this. It was beautiful to see. That's the kind of thing, You see somebody come in doing one kind of thing, a kid coming in doing a certain kind of writing or expressing themselves in a certain way. And then, over the course of the year, maybe the 2 years, there's just this, real growth. And we do a lot of writing like performing. We have I put together a poetry slam, and four times a year, and that is something where I've seen just, you know, kids just explode, and Caleb was really, you know, a big time explosion.
So where does somebody like Caleb? Where's Caleb writing? Where does his writing get published or seen?
You know what? I don't know where it gets published, dude. Caleb, where are you publishing your stuff, man? Do you have a? You know that's.
You know, he can call in too. Okay. 213-252-0998.
Do you hear that? You can call in.
213-252-0998.
You know, publishing is really the. That's the great question. You know, I mean, I do a little anthology with this writers club group that we have a reading at Skylight Books this June. Oh, yeah. We haven't picked the date, but it's going to be there. It's always in June, usually in June at Skylight every year, and we put together an anthology.
And it's one night or
just one night.
Skylight's a great place.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're awesome.
So, do you have other things? Do you have a poetry slam? Is that a different event?
Yeah, I do. I started off, you know, the second year I was teaching, I thought to myself that I should really invest this job with, you know, my own passions, you know, and there's a reason I'm doing it, and it's to do that. And my own, you know, passion for writing, you know, what I decided to do was, you know, like basically shape my teaching around my own passions for writing and reading, you know, and the creative life, because it was such an important thing for me, you know. So I started a writer's club. Asked a couple kids in my one of my classes if they would be into it, and they said yes. So we started it, and you know, it's a small group. Usually, not more than 10 commit to it, but that's also part of its real beauty.
Is it after school?
Well, it was after school for the first 5 years or so, but then started doing it during lunch because, you know, kids were having to take the bus home and things like that. So it's a lunchtime club. We meet twice a week. Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then out of that was born the Poetry Slam. You know, I mean, Poetry Slams are, you know, infamous now, and I think that's the right word. But
sure.
I've never been in one myself, but they're perfect for kids. Uh-huh. I mean, you get the audience, you know, you have these, like, crazy arguments afterwards about who should have won. You know, competition really breeds interest. Uh-huh. And so we do that four times a year, and we've been doing that for around... almost, I'd say around 10 years.
We got one here if you want to play a little. I don't know if you know which one it is, but it's Chicken Leather got it here, one of our DJs. And so who judges the Poetry Slam?
Well, Poetry Slam is judged by you know, students and teachers. I pick a panel of 5 judges.
Okay.
And so students, you know, students and teachers.
Should we try to play one?
Sure, man. You actually have one?
I believe we do.
How'd you get a poetry slam?
Our DJ Chicken Leather here.
Gain knowledge. Destiny is everyone's business because they're around you. And yes, if you're mean, disgraceful, you're most likely to get bad destiny. If you're good, respectful, you're most likely to have a good destiny. Middle and high school is where life, real danger, starts. Fear. But this doesn't matter if you die or can I make a mistake.
Excellent. So you're
all right.
That was awesome.
That was stories.
Yeah, this is actually a writers' club reading at Stories Books done last December.
So you always hear about how teachers should include what they love in the classroom, you know, and that. Not enough teachers do that.
I just want to say thank you.
Yeah,
you
seem to have managed.
A little back.
Yeah.
Well, and really cool to be doing this. Reading here. I just, you know, what else are you going to do? I mean, you got to, you know, you have this. You have this. Teaching is this awesome job where you have this.
If you're from California, it's winter.
I don't even know how to talk about it, man. There's so much going on in my head.
Well, just whatever you want to go with.
No, man. I mean, I really. It's hard to encapsulate. But it's this really, I mean, we could listen to these guys, actually. But, I mean, it's this really,
it's coming up.
I didn't know there was technical nearness.
There's technical nearness.
Technical nearness means a car broke down on the side of the road.
Horseshoes.
All right, ladies and gentlemen,
this is a precursor to exactly what you're the one and only Jasper Farahawk.
Oh, Jasper Farahawk.
That's a student?
Yeah, he's a student. He's an awesome guy.
Technical. No, this is technical.
Nearness.
Technical nearness. That's right. That's beautiful.
Can you guys hear
it? Is this good?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Let him hear. Rip. Let it rip, brother. Don't hold back. Can you lower this?
Yeah, it's encouraging.
That's yeah. I thought we can hear you.
Whatever you want,
right?
Yeah.
Hold
it in my face.
In a bad way.
Yes, in a bad way.
God, in your face.
Because of you, all has been lost in the depths of darkness. You have ruined my designs I fought years and years to protect and give life to, and you just squish them like a shriveled leaf under your shoe. I shall not allow it. If you think my designs can be rebuilt and reborn, then you are wrong. And thus, all has been lost to you and your evil ambitions. I shall strike you down in the name of all that is grand and pure and of the light. All I have wrought has been for naught. This shall be your end. It is.
Oh, there's a glitch.
That you awesome. Shall die.
Glitch.
Well, it sounds like kind of
comic book. Ways and allegiance.
But I get the feel.
Shall die.
Jasper?
Yeah, Jasper is an intense guy. He's very inspired by the kind of Tolkien myth building.
Uh-huh. What's that?
Well, I mean, he creates these fantastic worlds, and what he embodies in his poetry is this kind
of depths of destruction, fires of war, you know, this shining light
this,
of birth.
It was really awesome. He just articulates this.
Born by the light of
world,
you shall die. This I promise you. For your black deeds against all that is good, because of you, the world's end has come.
Yeah, I mean, he's like right in the Bible.
Yeah, but he's, I mean, he's really been inspired by the whole writing experience through the club and the class.
So
he's gone to summer camp now in North Carolina, you know, devoted to writing.
Unlike someone, I'm looking at you.
Hey, it's okay. That one he did was good.
He's scary. He's awesome.
He's awesome.
It's kind of heavy metal a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
rescue me from the fires of hell's great and merciful embrace. The black fires of malice threaten to consume my being, my very soul's life. Take your hand of purity and salvation and reach for my own. May my light engulf us both and save us from this hell's landscape of sin and corruption. May we grow wings and fly. Fly to the grounds above, to the great plains and forests of the realm where mortals dwell, and hold dominance. Away from the fires of contempt and sin and of malice. May you and I
take your hand of purity.
Your hand of purity.
Fly to the heavens, away from the great abyss that threatens us. Away from the dark demons who have sold themselves to the black covenant of hell's flames that threaten us all. All you need to do is grab my hand. The fire is looking at it hungry. And save me. Save me, my love. Save me from hell. From hell's embrace and all that's malicious and unholy. Save me. Save me.
Wow. That's like the opposite from the one that he just read.
Yeah. He's a complex individual.
This is the problem with having like
the dark and the light.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Into the microphone.
Oh, I'm not speaking.
Continue?
Sure. I mean, it's, I don't know.
Pain,
yeah.
Anguish.
Yeah, I mean, all these
fury,
kids are awesome. But,
and hatred. These are my feelings. These are me, myself. My rage shall tear asunder all that you have wrought. Forests shall burn, their embers floating across a hot, dry northern wind. Cities shall quake and be swallowed by my rage. The roads shall fall, stones falling into the fissure that I have wrought of my own fury. The sky shall break and the gods shall fall from their grace and glory and curse me eternally in all my rage and anger. Prepare, people of mortal kind, to tremble before my fury, my anger, my rage, my power. This shall be thy destiny. The hammer of me shall rain upon mortal earth, as a hammer rings down on it, on the anvil, the forge of creation. This anger, my anger, of my black fires, I shall destroy the whole of you and earth and all that is holy and good. I am the bane of goodness and glory.
Yeah.
So let's try to fast forward.
Jasper is just, he's awesome. I mean, here's a person who's used the, you know, the time in the club and the class, just, you know, mine his own wildness, his own kind of beautiful trajectory.
So somebody hands in a poem like that.
Uh-huh.
What do you write on it?
Well, actually, he doesn't hand that in. I mean, like, it's like that's done through club. He just brings it and shares it. And I'll comment on it like, okay. Here's the thing. It's just about allowing people to explore themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the kids to explore themselves, really without a lot of judgment. I mean, you know, there are times when it gets, I mean, his darkness, I don't really take as, you know, anything to be worried about, because I just see him as exploring this kind of
only one person,
this idea.
That's true.
And, you know, I mean, he's totally healthy. I mean, you deal with him like, you know, you can feel all the vibes. There's not like anything, you know.
No, I wasn't worried about
him. No. But I mean, it comes up. People are like, I've had kids in my class who just write like sometimes just really far out things. And it's like,
oh, yeah. You know, do you ever get into like, I'm a mandated reporter, I need to.
Yeah, sure, that comes up. You know, that comes up. That's a really tough one to gauge, because you're like, you know, are you, you know, by. That's a tough one to gauge, but that for sure comes into the situation. But even if it's not expressing like things there where I have a, you know, experienced abuse, but like where I want to hurt myself, you know, things like that. I mean, you certainly can bring that up. I mean, I brought that up with, you know, the other like, counselors, or, you know, get the kids to talk to somebody about stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's just appreciating the health of expression. You know, the health of expression. You know, that they're not like, whatever the feeling is, as uncomfortable, as strange, as, you know, messed up as it might be, they're not hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's an awesome thing. I mean, and that is really kind of the beauty of the word anyway. I mean, that's what it's all about for all of us. You know,
the part about other people hearing it is something that, you know, some people never get to.
Never get to. No, it's huge. I mean, that's something I point out at all of these readings too. I mean, in class, obviously, you know, having the class as audience, and being able to articulate your vision and feeling, you know, safe and listening to other people's and having their visions inspire your own, that's an awesome experience. And then when you take it to the public, like with these readings, even though this was a, you know, small reading, not much attendance, there's this hum of the artistic circuit that is made between artist and an audience, mm-hmm. that is, you know, amazingly powerful, and which inspires the kids. They're part of that circuit in this moment. I mean, their work is being held by an audience, and the audience is moving it back towards them, and that experience is is deeply moving and has stayed with a lot of them, you know, well beyond their time in the club.
I can imagine. This is Steve Abey from Thomas Starr King Middle School, and he does poetry workshops, poetry slams, at his school and elsewhere. And this is one at Stories in Echo Park. Do you want to introduce this next?
Yeah, I believe this next performer, poet, is Sage McBride Scanlan Perez.
Do you want to lower?
And she's been in the club since she's in eighth grade now. She's been in the club since she was in sixth grade. She was in my class and my creative writing class last year. She's phenomenal.
Okay, I wrote this one over the summer, so it's not very appropriate for the weather we have right now. Anyway. The sun's high in the sky, smiling down on us. The summer heat finding its way into everything, embracing us with its warmth, melting everything. My popsicle is melting. Melting down my fingers into a puddle by my feet. Moments are melting into flashes of fun and then disappearing into the puddle of old memories. The world is melting with the heat as the days go on. The days are melting together until everything is gone. Only the puddle remains and the memories, and even the memories are melting. And still the sun is there above us, spreading its warmth. And at one point, everything ceases to exist. And all there is the moment you're in and the fun you're having. And then as the moment passes, it starts melting too. Until all that's left of my summer is a big puddle of moments and days and the memories that are slowly starting to fade.
You know, I think when sometimes they'll be using poetic language and then they'll get into ordinary language.
Uh-huh.
I like that when that happens.
Yeah, it's cool.
Like the previous guy, Jasper, was talking about, the fires of hell, and then he said squish. It's called squish.
It's true. I mean, that's the other thing, too. I mean, the age, there's such a naturalness to their work. It's to me, it's really inspiring. I mean, I wrote this book called The Bus. And it was, so much of its form was inspired by reading student journals. Hmm. Just the way they were just really just connected to their language in this really emotional, kind of pure way.
I'm thinking of writing a book called Diary of a Wimpy Teacher.
Awesome.
With actual, things that, a teacher would have written on the back of, memos and with little pictured, doodles.
Uh-huh. That's awesome.
Because, Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Right. So that's breakthrough, dude. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what books have you written? You've written books.
I wrote a short story poetry collection called King Planet, and then a lyrical prose novel, I guess you would call it, called The Bus. And then I had in 2009, I had a book of poems published called Great Balls of Flowers.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a novel that hasn't been published yet that's finished. It's been floating around for a little while called Johnny Future.
Johnny Future.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you about. It's not published yet?
No, it was going to be published by one publisher. They dropped out of the picture. And then, I looked at the manuscript again after they dropped out of the picture and realized that I didn't really like what was going to be published anyway. So that was all awesome. So I revised it. So the new version, the revised version, which actually returns to some earlier stuff, earlier ideas I had, is sitting at home waiting for something to happen.
When do you write?
I write when I can, man. I do a lot of writing with the kids. Actually, that's something I should put together. I should put together a collection of the stuff that I've written in class with these guys. I'm not sure if it would be a poetry book or a teaching poetry book, or just a teaching book, and this would be, as part of it. I got to write something about teaching, but I do a lot of writing with the students, and I say, and then I guess when I'm working on something, it'll just be in the evenings.
Well, you can be a co-writer of Diary of a Wimpy Teacher if you want.
Let's do it, man.
All right, cool. I was thinking of having student notes. Have you ever keep those student notes?
I have at times. There's not really. No, I don't really keep the student notes.
But they're pretty funny sometimes.
They are. I was thinking of trying to incorporate that into the actual curriculum. Especially with certain kids, they will not do jack when it comes to school stuff, but they will write
long
tons of notes. Long, involved, narrative. But you're like, okay, how can you wed the two?
Right.
Not doing schoolwork, you're writing notes.
Do you fold your poetry into all of your what you're teaching, or is it separate from the standards and the testing stuff that you have to teach?
Oh no, man, I fold it all in there. I fold the poetry in there because it's the standards are really reflecting. I mean, what the standards are really trying to do is reflect. I'm trying to guide people towards education. Sophistication. I mean, they sound really uptight and uninspired, but it's just they're asking for knowledge of metaphor, they're asking for knowledge of participles. So I mean, but those are things that you can fold into really awesome creative writing exercises. I use a lot of grammar, structure, creative writing exercises, creating word combinations, wordplay combinations where they cannot use verbs, they have to use adjectives and nouns. Mm. And then through that, teaching participles as adjectives. So, you get firecracker Jesus soup, ruby-eyed stardust,
And then, you know, the kids start exploring. They start, and we do it on little pieces of paper. And, you know, they start exploring, you know, wordplay. This, that, you know, the kind of what I call the alchemy of language. And that is that, you know, two words simply by themselves, you know, have, are dross. But when they, you know, you combine them, or you combine them in a combination of, you know, with two or three, three or four, there's this pop. You know, there's this thing. And then the kids, you know, they surprise themselves. They're like, I didn't think that I could write like this. You know, and then you throw in like, okay, now drop in, you know, participles. We're using, you know, flying blue dogs of love. You know, okay, now throw in, you know, a prepositional phrase. You know, so you're like, you know, you're talking about, you know, grammar, which is all in the standards. But, you know, you're talking about it with as a tool for expression. I mean, because, you know, grammar is the road on which our ideas walk one to the other. And, you know, without it, what happens without it? We don't understand each other.
Can you go through a typical, do you have a set format in your, for each class?
Well, you know, I start with a dispatch and get to the lesson. I mean, I would say my teaching is shaped really about, you know, my own passions, which are, you know, obviously the writing, but also, like, you know, the, instilling the love of learning and life, you know, just being an educated person, or person who is into thinking about, you know, the beauty and wonder of, and the shape of, the wondrous, beautiful shape of being alive, of life. So, you know, we talk about, I use Socratic method, because it's an awesome so you, way to discuss.
I mean, you lead them to a discovery.
Lead them through discovery.
Through questioning.
Yeah, through questioning. Teach with the question. I mean, you know, and join in as a co-learner, because bottom line is it's not about what I know. It's about their education. Mm-hmm. It's about them discovering their own knowledge. So that's, you know, a really awesome tool. I mean, that is the motor of the engine of my class. Then also their systems analysis, which is something I started a few years ago. And I'm, you know, constantly learning more about it. But looking at, you know, the systems within something, you know, talking about how they operate and the connections between them. And I found that systems analysis, dude, is a great tool for thematic statement creation. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you take, like, Lord of the Flies,
yeah,
the systems of fear, you know, mm-hmm, and then the system of truth, and how those two collide,
mm-hmm,
you've got like this awesome thematic understanding of like how fear challenges the truth, and fear is challenged by the truth, how fear kills the truth. Wow. You know, I mean, which is literally what happens when Simon, you know, is killed by Jack and the Horde. Anyway, I know Lord of the Flies, not everybody knows it, but this beautiful character, Simon, he dies at the hands of the insane children who are completely freaked out on fear. They're just high on fear. So, you know, you're talking about, you know, using systems to, you know, to track understanding and interrelationships, and it totally relates to the standards. But it's way deeper.
Well,
yeah. Anyway.
What is systems analysis for? I thought that was like computers and stuff.
Well, I have appropriated it in my own way for, you know, literary analysis. I mean, I don't, it does, yeah, it's all about computers, but I don't really know how it works with computers. Okay. I mean, too much. But it's just anything, really, a system is everything.
Is a system like an economy? Like people will say an economy.
Sure. A system has parts that work together in a process for some purpose. And, you know, I mean, this table is a system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the legs, you've got the top, you've got the bolt handing it in there. And the thing is, what's, you know, so you have, this is how it operates. So if there's a problem with the table and you understand it systematically, you can look at the place where the problem exists. So you can look, you can take that kind of, also within the system, there are relationships with other systems. This table is right now supporting a myriad of other systems, you know.
Right.
And, you know, then you talk about how systems are ubiquitous. And, like, you talk about the systems within the body and also how, you know, their confluence, interrelationship. Nothing works by itself. And then you take that knowledge and you start looking at, like, a piece of literature, you know. And you look at, I don't know, Christmas Carol. You look at it for all the systems that are in there. You know, you have the social systems. You have the economic systems. And then I start talking about emotion as a system or ideas.
So you talk to them about systems? You use the word systems?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the kids get sick of it. They're the systems again. And but it's something that's constantly evolving. I just had a student send me stuff that him and his father had found on systems. That is, you know, some really awesome material that I'm going to try to infuse into class starting, you know, Monday. I teach, you know, Socratic method, systems analysis. We read a little bit of Plato. You know, we try to, you know, I use junior grade books, try to get some, you know, solid material in there, do a lot of connections between stories. Allegory of the Cave, dude.
Yeah?
Oh, it's awesome.
Huh.
Allegory of the Cave, just like, you know, enough to get the scenario of the piece, you know, so they understand these, you know, the cave dwellers are, you know, deluded into believing shadows are real based on their experience. And the guy that leaves the cave comes back but is threatened with death. You know, so these are archetypal scenarios, really, that all human beings kind of resonate with on some level.
Yeah.
And it's also a seminal tale that relates to so many things that the kids have seen. You know, I mean, they get it.
Like the person who, what is it, like the loner or the stranger comes back and has seen reality, but no one believes it. And
yeah, they think he's a fool. Because it's like he can't really, in the cave, he goes outside. And on coming back to the cave, he's blinded by the darkness. So he's talking about this outer world, which sounds like craziness, and he doesn't know jack about the world that they live in.
Right.
They're like, you went out and you came back a fool. You know, you can't even see this, you know. Because it's, you know, the great thing about that allegory is how they talk about how they build this kind of, they build a system of power based on perceiving the shadows. Mm. You know, there's a shadow power, which is kind of like the, I don't know, like you think of all the award shows where people just congratulated themselves on, you know,
their insider
on things that
world.
Aren't really, yeah, on their insider world. You know, they create a context for their own success. But in any real shape, is it, you know, is it success? But so you get all these great ideas, and then you can talk about how that relates to like so many stories. For instance, A Christmas Carol. How is Ebenezer Scrooge like a prisoner in the cave? You know? And there's a lot of similarity in language, too. Hmm. There's Scrooge's world is really shadowed, dark, and Marley comes to him chained, talking about how Scrooge carries around a chain of similar, you know. Is this chain strange to you? You've been working on one.
Is it Christmas Carol Dickens?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's cool.
So you said that you came to be where you are as a teacher slowly, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. This job takes time.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell who's got the natural. You know, you can meet people and you can tell their interests are going to lead them, you know, to a meaningful place with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, long as they can develop rapport and, you know, the other goofy things that you have to have, like
classroom
management.
Is that what takes the long time?
The rapport?
Yeah.
I don't think the rapport takes as long as the structure. Uh-huh. Establishing, you know, a coherent structure that has continuity, learning how to really implement your ideas. I think rapport, I mean, you know, if you like the kids and, you know, you respect them, and also, you know, you have a sense of boundary. I mean, I think a boundary is a huge thing. It's very much an act of respect, you know, to have boundaries. I mean, the idea that, you know, you're going to be friends with the kids does nobody any services. I mean, you'll be friendly, obviously, and appreciate them as, you know, 12-year-old human beings who are, you know, rich with idea and potential. But, you know, really, but boundary is another great, you know, indication of your concern. I would say for me, what took the time was learning how to be myself in a classroom, you know, to bring what I thought was important into a classroom in a structure, you know, in a way that really was meaningful. Like, I got to tell you, I was listening to the radio, KPFK, Jonathan Kozol was talking about the things he felt were necessary for education. And, you know, and this was like year three for me, and I was just kind of scratching and trying to figure out.
Oh, Jonathan Kozol, yeah.
Yeah.
And he talked inequality.
Right. He talked about Socratic method, and systems analysis.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay. So that's been the trajectory of my teaching.
Wow. So that was an important, that moment.
That moment was
set you on a
set me on a course. I mean, you know, because both of those are about critical thinking, and that's what, you know, gives the kids the power, and they do better on tests. I mean, you know, all that stuff works towards the tests without actually teaching towards the tests.
If I wanted to learn more about the systems analysis kind of idea, would I find that in the writing of Jonathan Kozol, or where would I find it?
That's a good question, man. It's hard to find. You know what? I can send you some links that some this student had sent me. I just kind of jumped in.
A student sent you?
Yes. Link? I've got some great kids. But I've been teaching with systems for the last couple of years, and I don't really – I've gone through a little bit of training on it, but it's really just been my own interests and my own willingness to experiment with something in the classroom to see, you know, where – you know, I mean, I understand how systems operate in a kind of life way. And I feel like they're powerful tools for comprehending, you know, any story or any situation. So I've just jumped in and kind of worked with them. But there's a lot to be learned about. But this kid sent me these websites that have, like, really specific models for systems, which I got to tell you, I do not understand.
Okay.
I was like, dude, I mean, I'm looking at these shapes. They're like generic system maps. You know, I really have to, like, study them a little bit more. But, but there's general parameter. I mean, general ideas, like what it means to be, like, a systems thinker that I totally, you know, get into and agree with.
I want to, at some point for the show, I have a friend who I was talking to about being on today but via phone. And he's started a new faction within the union. So to transition into that with you, I would maybe talk about, what are your feelings about the? We've talked about your classroom and how you approach teaching, but I think we could spend way more time in that. But what about, you know, the district and the union and teaching in general today?
Oh, the political stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to talk about there. I think, right? Are you?
The system is broken. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about there. Yeah,
man. What's your analysis of the system of education?
Man, that is a... Well, first of all, teaching is a challenging job. Very hard for people who have never done it to understand the challenges of the job because so much of it is invisible. It's about relationships, and that is a very, very difficult thing to understand unless you're there. And it's also different, you know, and like every hour, every period is different, every year is different, which is why the job, I think, is for me, is so fulfilling. You know, I mean, it's never boring. You know, you're constantly being able, you know, asked to retune things and develop. But
my uncle.
So is it time to roll?
No.
Okay. So what the thing is, man, how does that relate to the system in general? You know,
I mean, you don't get into trouble with your administrators at this point?
No, man. I got a lot of love for my administrators. Yeah. I've established good relationships with them. I mean, I bring good notice to the school. You know, been in the newspaper.
I got a caller who wants to know the phone number of the show here. 213-252-0998 if you want to call in. Sure, call in.
Call in.
I was going to call Jordan Henry, but this is another teacher from Santee High School where I used to teach.
Awesome. Wow, dude, I heard Santee is intense.
You know, its reputation is probably more intense than the school itself.
Awesome. That's usually the way it is.
I mean, it started off pretty rough.
Yeah.
There was a sort of race riot, at least one. And
yeah.
There was, you know, the mayor came to visit and some kid graffitied the bus that he was actually on, like, as he was in it.
That's awesome.
Okay, this is Mark.
That's awesome.
Teacher talk.
Hey, what's up?
This is Mark Musgrave, a history teacher from Santee Education Complex. How you doing, Mark?
Great, and I really appreciate listening to Steve and his methodologies. And I'm glad you guys, because we got to do a system analysis on LAUSD.
For sure.
And but I'll tell you one thing, one of my observations, and I'll let you guys go and continue, was, you know, he's doing some really great things, and I just find that he could be a strong instructional leader, and yet in all my years, and I've been teaching, I don't even know, not quite as long as him, but close to that number of years, I've never seen an instructional leader, a principal, an administrator like him. It just seems like we don't get... So my question to Steve would be, has he ever considered going into admin? I mean, I know obviously the reason is he loves the instruction, he loves the classroom, but what does that say? Who our leaders become, they must hate the classroom. What does that say? Thank you. Talk. I'll see you later.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, that's a good... I mean, that's part of the deal. I mean... I don't know. I mean, I know that I've had some good administrators. They recognized what I was doing and, you know, let me do it. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, and the proof is in the pudding. The kids do well on test scores. I mean, I teach, you know, gifted magnets, so the kids come in doing well. But, you know, by and large, I mean, I don't have a value added score. I haven't had access to that kind of analysis. But I have looked at, you know, their test scores. They, you know, do well. I mean, I've had years where kids have gained 100 points, you know. I mean, where, like, you know, majority, well, anyway, there's been a lot of success. But what is it that makes a good administrator? Or, like, so the question is, what was the question exactly?
Well, I think it was like a two-part question. The question is, A, would you want to become an administrator? And then he answered his own question, you know, no, because you like teaching.
I do like teaching, man.
And then B, well, what does that say about administrators?
Yeah. No, it's true. Like, I mean, I think the King has got an awesome administrator right now, and Dr. Murphy. She's an intelligent person, you know. Like, you know, you know, she's versed in society. You can have a conversation about with her. She's not somebody who's hiding out in education who really doesn't know anything. God,
but there are those.
But there are those. Education is this weird world. I think, you know, there was this article that was in the New York Times that just basically said that the United States has to value teachers more, which comes down to, like, you know, paying them and recruiting smart people. See, here's the thing. It's a tough job. I mean, you know, you're in the front lines, dude. You're on the trenches, right? Yeah. So the thing is, if you're going to ask smart, intelligent people who could go into a lot of different fields to invest in that job, which is the only people who can be successful at it are people who are, you know, willing to be creative on the spot and think about problems and adjust. I mean, you have to have some flexibility. Mm-hmm. Intelligent, creative flexibility. Mm-hmm. And the only way to get those people encouraged to do it, I mean, on a large scale, is to, like, make the job attractive, mm-hmm. you know, and not by, like, you know, shutting down the unions and not by, like, you know, cutting teacher pay constantly. But the thing is, at the same time, the unions have to, God bless the union. They have, you know, given me a good life. I've been able to support my family, you know, being, you know, the single, whatever you call it, means.
Father?
No, not a single father, but I'm the only income, single income.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's given me a good life. We have a house out in El Sereno. I mean, you know, it's like, things are good. And the thing is, if it wasn't for the union during all these crazy cutbacks, dude, I mean, we probably wouldn't even get paid, you know, for our, you know, for the summertime. You know, I mean, and the benefits would have been long gone, you know, had it not been for, you know, the resistance of the union. But on the other side of the coin,
there's people out there calling it teaching like a part-time job, you know, saying, man, oh, they don't work in the summer.
Dude, that's what I'm talking about. They have no idea of what the job really entails. I mean, do you consider being a doctor a part-time job?
Right.
I mean, the thing is, like, you know, there's a lot of study that goes into it. There's a lot of, I mean, teaching, the performance, when you're with the kids, that's the end result of all the planning and all the grading and everything. I mean, that's what you do when you're – I mean, that's when you're on stage. But there's so much that goes – I mean, a person who's had a good teacher does not understand how much planning, how much design, you know, has gone into that experience. They just think when the teacher shows up, it just, like, you know, I mean, throws the – I mean, now a bad teacher, sure, that's what they do. They show up, open up the book, you know, and there's no creativity, there's no interaction, there's no relationship. You know, and you know what? The demands of the job certainly can push people to burn out in that direction, because mm-hmm. it's hard, you know, to work, you know, and to try to be creative and to go up against what you have to go up against, which is a challenge, man. I mean, you're dealing with in a lot of cases, you're dealing with kids who come from seriously traumatized situations, and it is very difficult to be thoughtful, you know, and be dealing and processing trauma. I mean, serious, like, you know, trauma in their lives. Yeah. So I would say the union has to get more active and has to really control the debate of, I would say, teacher accountability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instead of waiting for the LA Times to publish an article and make, you know, a lot of, right, you know, bones on a story, the union should be the in the front lines of determining a system that really holds teachers accountable. It should not spend so much of its effort, you know, protecting those who don't deserve protection. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just my feelings. You know, I mean, I've been teaching 16 years. It seems to me that they spend a lot of time, you know, and a lot of their energy feeling like if we're not all together, we're separated. And I don't believe that. I believe that the union would have more power if they took charge of the accountability debate instead of waiting for the newspapers to do it. You know, protect teacher benefits. Get the district to absolutely, you know, account for their spending. You know, where does all their money go? I mean, we're talking about a small nation here in terms of their budget. You know, where does all their money go? Absolutely. But on the other hand, you know, require that, you know, the teachers have real, I mean, move to have real accountability. You know, I mean, I don't know if value added is a bad thing. I mean, it seems like an interesting kind of score. I mean, you know, we take these tests every year. You know, how do your students do? Now, does it have to be published in the LA Times? I don't, you know. Maybe if the powers that be, the union and the district, hadn't dragged their feet,
yeah,
and had actually made that part of the teacher evaluation, or at least had made that part of the debate, mm-hmm, it wouldn't have been such a big story for the LA Times. I mean, part of the power of the Times story is that this was
investigative.
This was information that was laying there, right, unused for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, the district has had this, you know, of information since the 70s.
I think it's healthy that it happened. I don't know if that needs to continue to happen where you publish all the teachers' scores.
Well, yeah, the publishing of the scores is just kind of brutal. But here's at the same time. There's front page LA Times today. One of the guys who scored highest on the value-added thing, he was basically, you know, teaching in a bubble. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a bubble of his own, you know. I mean, he wasn't necessarily getting a lot of support from his administration. He certainly wasn't getting, you know, any support from his other teachers. I mean, they didn't even know that he was doing what he was doing.
Hmm.
But now that his scores have come out, they've really started a professional development, mm-hmm, you know, scene at his school where he's teaching the teachers.
Right.
And, you know, right next door to him was a teacher who scored rather low,
huh,
on the thing. And he's developed a relationship with him where he's helping him out and, you know, they're working together. This guy got a pink slip.
Oh, yeah.
This guy, the highest scorer in the, you know, the value added, you know, he's like...
He was new? He was a new teacher?
No, not a new teacher, like 5 years.
Wow, yeah.
They're pink slipping people at 7 years.
Yeah.
7 years. I mean, it takes you 5 years. Well, about 5 years is when you start to... It doesn't, and things don't feel quite as new, you know.
Yeah. There's different... some people say 3, some people say 5. Some people say I've heard it said that you're as good as you're going to get after 3 years, but
well, that's not true, man. I got to tell you, something happened to me at 15 that was I mean, you know, there have been growths all the way through, but yeah, there was another thing that happened at 15 that had not happened before. You know. So, I mean, whatever. I could be a slow learner, but I think you're always growing in this job.
I got another call here. Let's see. The studio line is 213-252-0998.
You want me to call you, Jordan? You want me to call you on the studio line? Okay.
I have Jordan Henry from New TLA.
Oh, no, he's going to get mad at me.
No, it's New TLA.
Oh, New TLA.
Yeah. Let's see if he's... I don't think he's going to get mad at you.
People do. They get all mad.
I don't think he's going to get mad at you. Hold on.
Oh, that's cool. I can handle it. It's only words. But, I mean, the thing is, I don't think... Anyway, those are just my feelings about the union. It's just the way it is.
So he can't hear you through the mic, so I'll have to pass the phone.
What is up?
Hey, Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm good, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm here with Steve Abey, who's a poet and a teacher at Thomas Starr King Middle School.
Hey.
And... Yeah, and he was talking about how he thinks that, you know, the union, he he loves the union for its you know, benefits for teachers, but he feels that well, how would you say?
I think the union.
That's the future outside. Hello.
Hey there, Steve.
How are you, man?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm good. I was just saying that I mean, obviously, I appreciate the union, and I think it's absolutely necessary, and all of this, you know, crazy right-wing anti-union stuff is just really, really, you know, bad medicine. But at the same time, I think the union would empower itself more if it controlled the debate of teacher accountability instead of waiting for the debate to come to it.
Yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not against value added. It kind of makes sense to me.
Right.
You know, to look at how you fare on, you know, teaching your kids according to this test that everybody makes such a big deal out of. I mean, I don't teach the test in any way, shape, or form. I don't think actually teachers who are successful do. But
right.
Anyway, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I think I don't know about the value added stuff. I can't speak for Nick. And as for me, I'm in theory,
mm-hmm.
it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think we need to put some student data in our, you know, mm-hmm. we got to own our students' progress or lack of progress somehow.
Somehow. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not sold yet on the value added thing, partly because, I mean, it hasn't even landed yet, depending on what grade you teach, you know.
Right, right, right.
Like, we can't get, so I hear what you're saying. I think that you're right, our union has to get involved in the conversation. But I would say in this one particular field, I don't want to get ahead of it. You know, I don't want to embrace and adopt something that doesn't even exist yet. But I'm with you. And I think you're speaking to the choir and Nick and me. I mean, we're looking for folks like you who are proud union members, but at the same time think our union would be even stronger. And have more proud members if we actually got in front of some of these issues.
Well, and more bargaining power too.
Exactly.
I mean, we would have more bargaining power if we were the ones, you know, controlling the debate on accountability.
That's right.
You know.
Anyway. That's right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. You know, we got a new president elected who, sure, it's only been 3 days, and all I've got to go on is like the sound bites of the stuff he said to the press. But he sure sounds different than what we've been used to the last 6 years in terms of kind of an antagonistic, confrontational, you know.
Yeah.
Histrionic. Yeah, exactly. It's funny. I've been thinking, it seems like in a lot of unions, ours included, if leaders aren't totally comfortable unless they're under attack or on the attack.
Right.
Like, it's got to be one or the other. We got to be attacking or under attack. There's no middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I have high hopes that that Warren Fletcher will try to at least occupy that middle ground for as long as is reasonable.
Yeah.
To have these real conversations, like on data, like you said, not to jump to a conclusion before the model is even out there.
Right. Right. No, I think he will. I mean, I mean, I don't know. He didn't really. He was just really. I mean, his campaign was very, like, you know, down to earth and just talking about the basics, and which I think is really important, especially in this crazy time where we're totally under attack. You know, insanely so. Like, you know, we're being blamed for, you know, crazy budgets.
Right.
Crazy budget problems when GE is given, has $14 billion profits. And then is given back $3.6 billion in tax breaks.
Yeah.
They pay nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, whatever. But I just feel like, as, you know, that somehow accountability has to really be something that we are not afraid of thinking about.
I totally agree.
You know?
And there's a couple levers to that. I think this new superintendent is coming in, and his charge is to come up with a new evaluation system. And Nick and I have spoken about this, you know, one that is not just based on administrators observing or not observing you.
Yeah.
That's all that happens right now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's that.
Right. And so it's supposed to have five or six pieces to it, one of which may be I mean, one of which is student data, whether or not it's, you know, CST data to be negotiated. But so that's one thing. So that's one way we can get into the accountability conversation is by actually embracing and making those proposals better.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is, quite frankly, let's say you've got, you know, decades worth of nasty evaluations under your belt.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real logjam in the state in terms of it is, I mean, according to what I know, it can be terribly difficult not to fire a teacher per se, but like to fire like a bad individual. I mean, some of these nightmare stories you hear, and it's not just teaching, it's every profession. I mean,
sure.
There's people out there causing real physical and mental and sexual abuse to people, and it is still hard to exit even some of these very rare worst-case scenarios from the profession. It takes millions of dollars and way too many years.
Right.
So that's another angle that's got to be attacked. Like, all right, so let's say we do discover that there are people who are not really doing well by kids.
Right.
Then what are we going to do to make sure, actually, that they're, you know, that they're offered the door in a respectful manner?
Right.
So, yeah, we gotta work ahead of us.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, these are all really big questions. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Nick wants to talk.
Hey, so what's the future of the task force, Teacher to Effectiveness Task Force? I think I read something about it recently.
So the task force, we basically haven't done anything for a year. It was about a year ago that we came out with our findings. And the findings include the new recommendation model is this, that there's going to be a piece of student data, which everyone has heard a lot about. There's going to be continued observations by principals. There's going to be peer observation. There's going to be student feedback, parent feedback, and then self-evaluation.
Yes.
So there's six pieces. So each of those, as far as I know, are going to be, some may already be working out at some school, you know, like on an experimental basis. You know, nothing binding, but some schools have already said, all right, this year we're going to start observing each other, peer observation.
That's good.
They're practicing it to see what works, what doesn't work. So they're rolling out these things. Other schools are doing student surveys. Other schools are doing parent surveys. So all this stuff is already happening in really small models.
Uh-huh.
And they're hoping to make it bigger and bigger. But then over the next couple of years, the idea is, you know, see what's working and replicate it. And if it doesn't work, get rid of it. And I think the end goal is that 2014,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be all systems go, like whatever is negotiated. But these six pieces should all be worked out in the next 3 years
mm-hmm.
so that every district employee by, you know, this time 3 years from now will be evaluated in this new manner. And it's not just teachers. That means principals'
right.
evaluations. They're going to be evaluated by other principals. They're going to be evaluated by the students and the parents at their school,
uh-huh.
the teachers at their school.
Awesome.
So it's the 360-degree evaluation model.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
And supposedly I've heard from some folks, actually, like the non-unionized employees in LAUSD, and there's uh-huh. not a lot of them,
right.
but it's like the superintendent and the local district superintendents. Anyone who basically is not in a union, I've heard they're already doing it. They're already starting these 360-degree evaluations. So if that's true, it's encouraging that for once, you know. It's
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, the student piece that you were talking about.
The student piece that you were talking about, you know, student evaluations of teachers, I think, is really, really essential. I think as a teaching tool itself, I mean, you would have, I think it would just, I believe it would empower the students, and that would reflect in their overall relationship with the school.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Jordan.
Hey, my pleasure. It's nice to talk to you, too, Steve.
Bye, man.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Nice to talk to you.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
So that was Jordan Henry, founder of New TLA. All
right.
New TLA.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Okay. It's about we've done about an hour, I think.
Awesome.
So we could go
awesome.
Go out with one of your students' poems if you want.
Yeah,
to.
Sure. Let's see who's on who's on.
I think it's Sage though.
Is it Sage? Okay.
The noise is coming in from all directions, filling my ears with its music. People are coming one after the other in a blur of colors until every distinction fades. Seconds are passing as I stare at everything until a flash of light penetrates the moment, capturing it forever. And as the days go on, more moments are captured, so that when I'm back in my familiar surroundings, I can bring out the pictures and remember, and then jump into the memory and relive it. Relive the cars flashing by, see the buildings going on past the clouds. Relive the people with their own destinations walking around. Relive the feeling of excitement and joy and dread as you remember that sooner or later you have to go home. And as you step away from the pictures, away from the memories, you know that you will never forget your experience. But if you do, you could always go back to the pictures and relive it.
All right, Sage.
So, anything upcoming that people should look out for? Anything that you're doing? I know you were at Echo Park Film Center with a student film project. And what other stuff do you have coming up in the near future?
Well, we're going to have another poetry slam at King Middle School. I believe it's going to be April 13th. Having some issues negotiating the date. And you know what? I mean, public-wise, not so much happening. I'm going to work tomorrow.
You're going to
work
tomorrow?
And we're going to start working on Lord of the Flies.
Cool.
And been reading a little Dhammapada, so we're finishing up that with another class.
What is it?
It's a Buddhist text. Mm-hmm. It's got some really cool ideas about the power of thought, mm-hmm. and how that determines so much of our life. You know, all that we are. All that we are is what we think. With our thoughts, we create the world.
Wow. Yeah. When did you start using that?
I've used that, for the past, couple years. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean is about in terms of the job, growing. I mean, you discover things and you start thinking, hey, this would, in this form would be cool to bring to the class. Because, I mean, I got to tell you, it's been a powerful tool. The kids contemplating how they shape their lives with their thoughts and how that, how thought... I mean, it goes along with the systems analysis, how thought creates reality. And the kids pick up on it, man. They're just like, right, of course. This building was created in somebody's mind before it was, built. Which is something I think a powerful seed to plant. So we've been working on that the last couple of days. And as far as a relationship piece, you start looking at something like Lord of the Flies, where thought, the interior world is completely responsible for what happens on the island. Anyway,
thoughts and crazy emotions.
Well, yeah, the crazy emotions, all of that, Jack's competitive fear, the fear, how that shapes so much of their reality. Well, completely shapes their reality, burns the island.
So anything you want to say to teachers who may be...
Any teachers who are out there listening, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, God bless you. Stay true. It's an awesome job, unlike any other. We are on, we are on the front lines of so many things, the political landscape now, people's lives. It does make a difference. The seeds we plant are real, and the experiences we create. See, this is the thing about teaching, man. It is an art, the art of creating space in which people can, discover things about themselves, discover their own art, the art of thought, the art of being. Art as in, life, God, love. That's what we're doing, Earth, art in the middle.
That's my Uncle Dan.
Yeah, art in the middle of Earth, exactly. That's what the teaching is all about. So know that your job is true, man.
And that what you're doing matters. And together, together we go forward.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Steve. Steve Abey from King Middle School.
Okay, this one's called Kingdom. My dad came up with the name. Thank you. Numbers swirling, locks clicking open, bells piercing the air, eliminating the time you thought you had. Clothes pulled on, locks left open, people running, hearts pounding, and the bell rings again. And you're in the doorway, but your cheeks aren't in your seat, so you're late. Great. Talking, going on for hours, homework eaten by dogs, notebooks left at home, borrowing a pencil, not giving it back. Thousands of questions on your mind, but you're too scared to ask. Sleeping in class, getting caught, after school detention. Perfect. Finally, 20 minutes of freedom, full of burned food, screaming kids, flying bananas, and laughing. So much laughing, cut off by the bell, that damn bell, calling you back to class. I can't wait. Waiting, so much waiting. Clocks moving backwards, time stopping, except it's not, because the teacher's still talking about something we don't care about, but she goes on, and suddenly she stops, and she's asking you a question, but you don't know the answer because you are waiting for class to end, and then the bell, that damn bell, saves you, and the day's over, and we're free. Finally, freedom. Well, not really, because school is following you home in your planner, and you're left to do homework that makes no sense because you weren't listening, and you're waiting for the end of class. And your head's empty, but they want to stuff it with information you don't want, don't think you need. Welcome back to King.
Words is yours. All right, I forgot to mention that Sage was the first place winner at the Fall Poetry Slam.
We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom. Teacher, leave them kids alone.
Since this is, you know, kind of a loose show here, format, Steve, as we were talking here, and
oh, and my daughter's reading.
Oh, is your daughter reading coming?
Yeah, out? She's reading a poem now.
Oh, let's hear it.
And then this other one is also Dispatch. Dispatch number 14. okay. It's called My Mind. My mind is a love-powered taser shooting down from the mountains. My mind is... tuned to the lunch boxes, the hats, the hair clips, the black old-fashioned chucks, tapping up and down against the tile. My mind is the fear-driven fire hydrant only used in scary situations. My mind is a post-it note. My mind is filled with post-it notes. They cover up. My mind is the poster of the man.
Well, the president of the United States said that the mind is...
Well, I'm sorry. This is cutting out here.
It's cutting to pieces, poor child. She's being pixelated.
But what were you going to say about teaching as spiritual?
Teaching as spiritual endeavor. You know, you are creating an environment where, you know, students are learning about themselves and their place in the world, and you know, and that is essentially a spiritual task. And you know, it also puts the teacher, you know, through that experience where you learn about yourself, who you really are, where you are in, you know, what you believe, and your, you know, your place in the world. I mean, it's a spiritual job at its essence, and to create relevance in the classroom, it has to be approached in that way. I think, you know, however configure the spiritual question, you know, spirituality is relevant. What people lack is spiritual connection. You know, so when school doesn't approach that, it becomes irrelevant to kids. It's not about subject matter. It's not about, you know, you're reading the right book. I mean, in terms of like this book relates to them because it has socioeconomic issues that are relevant to them. That is not what I think creates relevance. What I think creates relevance is the spiritual connection. You know, any person, any place can relate to a situation that is not them, but if they are asked to relate to it on a spiritual level. That doesn't mean you don't teach things that have socioeconomic relationship, but it becomes pandering unless you're approaching it from a spiritual direction, you know. And that is the essence of relevance, because that is what every human being longs for, you know, to be understood and to understand themselves spiritually. And, I mean, you know, you drop out of school at 16 because there's another avenue which is more spiritually present for you, you know.
This is our tech person here. Do you want to tell us how you dropped out at 16? He says no. He just walked into the office. He didn't mean to do that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he was talking about how he had other things that were of greater value. And you know, the thing is, like,
and he's a reverend.
Irreverent or a reverend?
A reverend.
That's awesome. That's cool, dude. You know, so I just think, like, you know, when school is meaningful, it's because you're having that kind of experience where you're being asked the big questions and you're being asked to form. Because look at the kids reading their poems. These are original. These are their writings. This is not like I'm telling them to write about stuff. But they are in the midst of the philosophical spiritual debate. Like, what is the meaning of life? Why am I here? What am I doing this for? You know, so I think to embrace that and to use that and to go with that. And every kid the gangster is making a spiritual statement. You know, the dropout is making a spiritual statement. The kid who is like getting into drugs and alcohol is making a spiritual statement. I mean, all of those are spiritual statements. So I think school is most powerful when it addresses that. And that so much of what lacks, you know, what school lacks is that kind of direction. Nobody talks about it like that. You know, it's part of our social dilemma, I think, is like, you know, how to really address spirituality without sounding either new age or fascistic, you know, to have it really be down to earth and meaningful. That was the other thing I wanted to add in there.
And now I think maybe we got past the glitch here. Maybe we can listen to Maya again.
Got her the five-finger discounted Twix bar in the lint-filled pocket over the blood-pumped body. A newborn baby, fresh from a mother's womb, opening its eyes to the secondhand smoking STD crap-filled expensive monosodium glutamate beautiful world. The baby's first caress, first touch by the mother's hand, illuminating the baby's bones, illuminating the baby's mind, illuminating the baby's life. Illuminate me. Free, freedom, to run away, to let go, to be so close you can almost taste it, to jump into action, to kick sand into that person's face, jump off a roller coaster, puke in the holy water, get electric. Back, piss on. Forget your own birthday, swim with the sharks, knock over a little kid's sandcastle, dismantle your bed, paint your nails neon orange, by yourself, with no one else, free.
It's red and green on top for Christmas. Isn't that cool?
What about the Jewish people? I know.
Well, it's the second night of Hanukkah.